Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're back for part two of the review of the offense from that Eagles preseason game. What there is to review of the offense from that Eagles preseason game. Joining me to do that is Gabe Ferguson. Gabe, how you doing?
Hey, Ken. I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on the show.
Always a pleasure to have you. Part one, if you didn't listen to it, you might want to go back. We talked about the order of entry a lot. Some, I think, really interesting thoughts about that. Talked a lot about the backup quarterback position and some of our fears that seem to be, I would say, growing based on that first game. Fair enough?
Yeah, I think, if there may have been some expectations for Leary going into this game and into this offseason. And I think what we found was that he needs to show some more in order for us to be confident about that. So, yeah, I think there's some concerns. And I think, I would imagine the coaching staff and the front office has a few question marks as well about, do we have the player that we need if there was something to happen to Lamar?
Very significant fear. And Leary in particular had a lot of fear of throwing the ball down the field. The problem with Johnson seemed to be he left a clean pocket the only couple of times that he really had a clean pocket. So he turned his one ATS opportunity into a sack zero. And another one that might have been an ATS opportunity had he stayed in the pocket and thrown it. He ran for a 2-yard gain on third down from the 5-yard line, which turned a possible touchdown into a field goal. So that was frustrating. Anyway, we're past the quarterbacks for right now. We're going to talk about the offensive line a little bit here. I know a lot of the people are interested in hearing some scoring. We had some of the big battles on the offensive line. We had Cleveland at center, Fa'alele at right guard with his first playing time there, really. And Voorhees getting his first start at left guard as well. Those guys all got a pretty significant trial. Normally, I like to work with larger snap numbers than we had, but you deal with what you have. And Voorhees had 30 snaps, 29 of which were scored. That was the same amount of play that Fa'alele got, and Cleveland left even a little bit earlier with only 23 scored snaps. So we don't have a lot to work with, but we want to talk about both what the results were and then maybe other things you saw as well, Gabe.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think to me, this is the most interesting part for the Ravens roster right now is the offensive line. I think there's a lot of potential combinations that could be on the board still. There's a few more questions perhaps that we have after this game than maybe going into it. So I think we can get right into it and kind of take a look at how these players played and what our expectations are for, the rest of the preseason and potentially roster, final roster decisions.
All right. I'll jump right in as how we scored it here. And then we'll have some discussion about this afterwards. But Voorhees really struggled with his anchor against the Eagles. The Eagles did, as you mentioned, the first show, present a very significant front for a start of a preseason. And even their backups are pretty good. But their starters, include Jalen Carter, who saw time, include Nolan Smith, who was a, highly coveted draft prize fairly recently. Was it 2 years? The year, 23?
Yeah, 23.
And so, they certainly had guys that were on the field and could do things. But Voorhees had a lot of trouble anchoring versus pretty much everybody. And he had parts of 5 pressures. And I'm going to read my action verbs for each of these. 3 fulls and 2 halves. And by the way, I'm going to say right now, if you look at PFF, they have 0 pressures for Andrew Voorhees. That is absurd. But PFF scored him down in a similar manner to me because they've got him with about a 27 pass blocking grade for the game. So they know he played poorly. They're just, their definition of pressures doesn't really capture it. Okay. My definition of pressures basically says if you imperil the cone, you've created a pressure because the quarterback can no longer safely step into his throw, and they don't necessarily feel the same way about that. But anyway, I'll tell you, the five pressures he had were bowled by 93 for a full pressure, bowled by 45 for a full pressure, failed to pick up stunt 48, half pressure, failed to negotiate stunt handoff, half pressure, bowled then allowed PD to, it's DT Tuipulotu, it's number 95. So, and that was a full one. So it wasn't any one player. It was a bunch of different players who this is happening to. It's not all, you know, the top guys. Like Jalen Carter didn't get him for one in this game. But, you know, it's a very frustrating night in terms of pressure. He missed four blocks in addition to that, which is not a good total. That's quite a lot for only 29 plays. And those included three more losses at the line of scrimmage. Additionally bad. So those are plays that might have been pressures had the quarterback held onto the ball, but they were probably ball out quicks in at least two of those cases. I think one might have also been on a run. He did some good things. He had two blocks in level two. He delivered one pancake, connected on two of three pulls. He did have two highlights. He had one good stunt pickup to go with some of the ones that didn't work out. A nice combination block where he climbed and blocked somebody in level two. So it's not like he did nothing well. But the overall scoring was not good. And I know you can pick individual plays and, you know, convince yourself from looking at video that this play is more important than that, or I want to make an excuse for him on this play or whatever. This is where you really need to have a system for looking at what happened here. And I see him at about 0.41 per play, 12 points on 29 plays. It's an F. I don't have a way to sugarcoat this. And I'm one of Voorhees' biggest advocates. I was really excited about him coming into the game. I thought he had a lot of strength. I thought his anchor was the untested component because he's kind of a tall, lean lineman. Pad level has to be good for a player like that. And he's also got some limited length that might have been a concern in this game. But
yeah, so I just kind of want to take a quick step back because, you know, one of the things you mentioned was just some of the players that he was playing against. You know, you said he didn't play against Jalen Carter. He did play against Milton Williams. That's 93. That was the initial bowl. Yeah, I mean, he's been a rotational high end player for the Eagles. Number 45, that's Devin White. You know, he's been a very good linebacker in the league for several years. These are NFL starting caliber players, and he's in his first action. So I just want to kind of be like devil's advocate here for Voorhees from that aspect. But I think that what I think us included, probably the pass protection is potentially an issue. Would you say that there is opportunity for him to improve there? Is it technique? And is there something on the other side of in the run blocking that you gave you some more potential for his ability to stick?
I think he moved pretty well. So I don't really have a problem. I think a lot of the run blocking things, the Ravens could use a guard like him that can move a little bit to level two, because you're not always going to be able to let Linderbaum climb. Sometimes Linderbaum has to hold that block at the line of scrimmage and the guard is forced to climb. So I think that potentially could work out. You know, last year we saw an enormous step forward for Linderbaum, a smallish center with short arms and, you know, just a guy who was overwhelmed by big pass rushers in his first season and had a really lousy pass blocking year. Now, you never know that because nobody will admit it, but he did. PFF will, you know, in a relative sense, will show it to you. But in his second season, he did a lot of things that improved him. And so if the Ravens and their coaches and whatever guru that Linderbaum might be working with personally could work with Voorhees, yeah, I think there's a good chance for it, because I think Voorhees actually brings more to the table than Linderbaum does in terms of pass blocking elements. You know, he's stronger in terms of weight. He might not have the ideal frame. Linderbaum being a little bit lower to the ground might have a more suitable frame for pass blocking. So there is that, but I think that Voorhees probably is a guy who, if it could be corrected for Linderbaum, I think it could be corrected for Voorhees.
And I think it's safe to say that strength probably isn't the issue for him, at least upper body strength and probably, you know, overall strength. And he was kind of famously did extremely well in bench press. He set the bench press record for the 2023, you know, combine on a torn ACL. So I think, you know, there is, you know, some level of promise for him to kind of like put it together. So maybe, you know, it's some technique, it's the ability to kind of like reset his anchor. We mentioned a couple times the bull rush in particular got him. I think that's something that potentially could be a technique issue, and some more reps would be beneficial there. And then, you know, there are also some issues with identifying and picking up blitz and twists and stunts. That's something that kind of just comes with experience and reps, and especially working with the players around you on the offensive line and knowing kind of like what they're going to be doing, when they're going to be doing it. And right now, this is not going to be the Ravens starting offensive line. So it's kind of like you're in playing with players that you've probably had very few reps with in those positions. So I think there is potential for that to improve as well.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, the Eagles were fairly relentless in the games that they were playing up front, in blitzes they were bringing. I mean, it's frankly, they look like the Ravens defense and what they do to torture their own offense every day of camp when they're 11-on-11s, frankly, just, you know, running every kind of scheme you could imagine. And that's good. You want Voorhees to become accustomed to that before September 5th, he all of a sudden finds out that NFL teams can do that to you. But anyway, it's a positive thing. It's a bad data point for Voorhees, and I hope, you know, it's also 30 snaps. And I do know there is week to week variation, and it hasn't been that unusual for players to score in the 40s one time a season. You know, and that happened. It's just bad when you've got one data point and that's it. That's not a good starting point. Then again, I also expect less from him as a first year player. If he could play at a C level this year, that would be very good in terms of potential development. In fact, that's exactly what Linderbaum did as a rookie. And he you know, improved tremendously to a Pro Bowl level in his second year. If he could play at a C level, that would be terrific this year. That's all the Ravens really need to get out of him. It's at this point, I'd say it's not a given that that will occur.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of question marks about the offensive line. Voorhees is one of those big question marks. But I think, you know, you don't need him to be a Pro Bowl player in order for the offensive line to be successful and for the offense in total to be successful. So I think if you can get him to be kind of like that average player, then it's actually going to be a win for the team as a whole. Is there anything, you know, about this performance, you know, aside from clearly like the gross negative things that we already covered, that has, you know, a long-term like concern? Like obviously a small sample size, but is there anything that was like, oh, this is something that he's going to really have a major issue with? Or is it kind of just like small set of, you know, reps, first time out there? There's lots
quality
of things. So like, I think is there anything that was like, okay, but there's something that he was doing that was like that technique, like he was lunging or like his feet were bad, like something that was like, okay.
But in a sense, like not having an anchor as a pass blocker, I can't think of much worse things than that. I mean, let's take the other guard and his problems, Falele. I mean, he doesn't use his arms very well. We talked about that a lot during the first episode. That's a different kind of problem and is probably correctable and still probably quite difficult to correct. I'm very concerned about anchor questions.
Yeah.
And you know, if it can be so fundamental, it can be hard to overcome. It can be that guy just has a really hard time squatting at the proper pad level and being effective that way. He doesn't have particularly long arms, so it's not like he's Brent Urban and can get really low and get fantastic leverage with his long arms. He doesn't have that advantage, which means he's going to face a lot of first contact. It may mean he has to improve his hand fighting. You know, the fact that a very talented player like Linderbaum was able to do it doesn't mean that he's able to, even though he's got the strength. But that would be an interesting thing. I mean, the nice thing to go back on is we didn't really see his strength play into his pass blocking in this game because he was really getting beaten in his upper body and in his pad level. And the fact that he was too quickly beaten off the ball by pretty good players in this thing. I think he could. There's certainly hope that he could improve. You could pick good things. He didn't let the quarterback get hit. That's nice.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, Ronnie Stanley has made a career basically out of not letting the quarterback hit and giving up some slow death pressures that Lamar has been able to move away from. But there was too much invasion of the cone for that to continue, as a regular thing this season. He needs a drastic improvement in pass blocking to be ready for that opening game.
Well, let's hope we can maybe put some of it up to first game jitters and maybe some of it is mental, I think, as well, in those instances, allowing a player to kind of get in your pads before you do it's like a processing thing to a certain extent. It's a technique thing. I think that can be fixed to a certain level. So let's hope that, he's going to get more opportunity. I think that's safe to say. So let's see how it goes in the next couple of weeks and see if that improves at all, because I think, there are other potential players who could slide into that role if he has a similar performance again. So we'll have to kind of see.
Yeah. So they do have options, and maybe we talk about that at the end here, but, let me move on to Cleveland at center, who played only 23 plays that were scored, 24 plays in total, made 20 blocks, missed 1.5 pressures. Now here's where he lost a significant number of points. He had what is frankly a very nice block, keeping Jalen Carter several yards in front of Johnson. I'm going to say he was probably 4 yards, maybe 5 yards in front of Johnson, but it was kind of in that range where he's making a perfectly good pass block. Carter didn't really exactly take a step back, but he might have taken a half step back, elevated, and knocked down a pass that Johnson threw. Now, a couple of things about that. The first is that Cleveland is responsible for staying engaged with the body of that player so that he can keep him from getting his arms up. And sometimes the player's going to get lucky and you take your negative two like a man at that point, when it comes up at the scoring. But the truth of the matter is that player was so far away from Johnson, it's the fault of that play is much more on Johnson. So this is a case where I'm going to give you his overall grade here, and then I'm going to give you his overall grade without that play, and it's a big difference. So he got a 0.74 at center. That's not really good. Even after adjustment, it's 0.77, and that's a D. It's actually a D with or without adjustment in that case at center. But had he not allowed that pass defense, he would also have gotten the block on the play. So he'd been 3 points higher, and he would have been at 0.87, which is a B with or without adjustment. And, it's an enormous difference, that one play. And this is why I don't really like dealing with the small sample sizes of preseason for offensive line scoring. But I also look at it and I say, I would understand completely if people don't think that Cleveland should be charged for that play. And he played a significant amount better than the D level, in my opinion. The snaps being basically just fine in this game. No disastrous ground ball or over the head of the quarterback snaps, I thought was very good. And I think in general, he wasn't asked to do very much, didn't have to pull, didn't make any blocks in level two, didn't pancake anybody, although that certainly he's not been given a sign on that. He did have one highlight block that was on a stunt handoff. So that's nice to see, because that's a difficult thing to figure out. And he had another half pressure that occurred on a botched stunt handoff with Voorhees that I charged each of them for. He gets, either way, he's going to lose the points for that. But overall, I think that Cleveland played better than his score really indicates.
Yeah, I think my initial review of the offensive line in Cleveland, I thought he probably played at a B level. I was actually somewhat impressed. I think some of the things that I noted were that he's a little slow out of his stance. And I think someone who's not a natural center, that's understandable, because, first and foremost, you're focusing on your snapping, especially when it's not something that's maybe as secondhand to you as someone who's played center for years and years and years. So I felt like he was a little bit kind of, and we're used to watching Tyler Linderbaum, who's so quick. And that was something that I think Cleveland is going to need to work on if he's going to be playing at that position. And he's also naturally much kind of larger and a little bit more slow footed as well. So that was one thing that I noted. And then the other thing, in pass protection, I thought he actually played really well. So I think pass protection, he was better. Maybe there was a couple of stunt issues. But I thought he was better in pass protection than in run blocking in this one, just because he's a little bit slower in the run blocking, and the Ravens were doing a lot of like zone kind of concepts, and he felt like he like kind of lagged behind. I don't know if you have any thoughts on his ability to run block in that scheme type of in particular.
Yeah. So, I mean, zone blocking is a lot of matching your pace with the players next to you. And that can be something if you don't do well, but there's never really a pace that the offensive line is moving left or right at that's beyond the capabilities of anybody on that line. You just don't move, you know, you're not moving at a full run. You're moving at a, you know, kind of half speed. The major part of zone blocking is making sure that no one crosses your face, first of all, and that you have your left arm out. Your defensive side arm out, you know, directing traffic away from the gap you're trying to cover. So it's fairly basic stuff. It's not like there's anything that's too fast for Cleveland. And Cleveland, you know, you're right about his size, but you know, the other side of that coin is Cleveland, if he starts a game for the Ravens, even if he plays anywhere, he'll be one of the biggest centers in NFL history, if not the biggest at, you know, what is he? 6'6", 360 now he lists that for the Ravens. I mean, it's just been nobody else that size who's ever played center. He dwarfs the nose tackles who play opposite. There's no nose tackle playing at that kind of weight anymore. Used to be nose tackles outweighed centers all the time. But you know, Cleveland is that guy across the line of scrimmage from you don't want to really be facing. And I'm not sure how much it matters that he's a little slow. It does matter, but I'm not sure how much it matters. He's a little slow out of his stance. The jolt you get from having him there, whether it's part of a combination block or he's the guy you get on the back end, or even if he's just a guy who's got his right arm or left arm on your blocking assignment, is quite valuable. So I'm very intrigued by the possibility of Cleveland continuing at center. We'll see if it really works out. But it's more than just a thought experiment. It's really something interesting to try with the combination of players they have with Derrick Henry, the set of tight ends they have, and with Lamar Jackson.
So I think it is interesting. Obviously he'll be the backup clearly. But do you expect there to be a situation where he would be the primary person to come in and play center? Potentially, if he was starting right guard, would he move to center if something were to happen and someone else would play guard? Or do you think, because that's kind of like a two-for-one type thing where you're maybe moving two players, or is he more valuable to stay at guard potentially if that's where he ends up starting the season?
I honestly think either is possible, and it's dependent on how the other players look at the position. So let's say Tayshaun Manning were to suddenly rise up and take over a guard spot and look pretty good. And, you know, they've got a guy, then Cleveland at center, if Linderbaum goes down, looks attractive. You know, if you have Daniel Falele, you know, steps up his game and plays well at guard, then I think you've got the possibility that you'd be perfectly happy with Cleveland at center. You wouldn't be perfectly happy because you've lost your Pro Bowl center, but you'd be happy with that being an option.
Yeah, I think we still probably need to see more of him, and my guess is we'll probably see potentially another game of him starting there. Do you think that's likely?
I think it's likely because I'm not convinced of exactly when Tyler's going to be back. Now, today was a writing day for me, so I couldn't make it out to camp. So some things happened. I understand Kyle Hamilton kind of got hurt at the end of practice. And, you know, I have to catch up now tomorrow when I get back. But, you know, this is I'm like, I don't know exactly what's happened in terms of the offensive line today at camp is what I'm telling you.
Okay.
All right. Let me move on and talk about Falele a little bit. 29 snaps for him, 26 blocks, 2 missed, and 1/2of pressure. The only other thing that went wrong for him is he had that idiotic looking false start where he's dancing like Tinkerbell, you know, across the line of scrimmage looking, it looked like a lot of wasted steps in that false start. So not only is Coach D going to be mad about him for the false start itself, he's going to be mad at him because, you know, look at what are you doing with those footsteps there? So, that was his large negative score of -3 on that play, 22 points, 0.76 per play. With an adjustment, that's a C level. And it's, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Honestly, if they could get a C level out of Falele, I think that'd be terrific. So he didn't do anything to lose his spot this time. So the Ravens are probably fortunate that the Linderbaum situation is not yet resolved and they can continue on with the way they're doing it with Cleveland. At least, I don't think it's been resolved today. And they may go another week with the exact same starting lineman.
I think it's interesting to see Falele there at right guard. And maybe it's out of necessity in the current situations, and maybe they're not rushing to get Linderbaum back out there so they can see players more of with more of extended reps. I think the obvious question with Falele is does he actually play at guard at the size that he's at? Like, is this a thing that can actually happen? He's one of the largest players in the NFL. I think, what is he, 6'8", 6'9", 370?
Look it up for you right now.
We talked about Cleveland being huge. He's even bigger than Cleveland is.
He lists at 6'8", 380. And Cleveland lists at 6'6", 360. That's an unbelievable amount of human there at those two positions.
Yeah. I mean, the idea of having them next to each other is kind of intriguing just for that very reason. You kind of have just like a wall of beef there that's blocking for your quarterback, especially on passing downs. Do you think they're too big? I mean, just from like, can you see if you're the quarterback, do you have concerns about like, having a wall of size in front of you?
I really don't have that fear with Lamar Jackson. He's always been a guy who's had to, you know, find lanes, and he likes to find direct throwing lanes as opposed to heaving the ball up and on fade routes, for example, and being a real touch passer that way. I'm not really concerned about that. I think I am concerned that having two big guys next to each other can create problems. And you also don't derive as much of the benefit from both of them being big. So I'd rather have big guy, Linderbaum, big guy be the middle combination. Because I think then you have the multiple body types. You have can make use of Linderbaum's speed better. Linderbaum probably helps you set up some combination blocks and move, even if Linderbaum's got to be the one taking the back end of that double team at the line of scrimmage. Then you have a big boy moving out in space. And, you know, we saw last year Morgan Moses do a terrific job in space as a large but not that large man.
I think, you know, Moses has done a good job throughout his career of being able to kind of play, I think, more nimbly than his size would suggest. I'm not sure if Falele has
no,
that.
No, he doesn't have that track record yet.
but you know, maybe, you know, with some work, he can get there. I did find like watching them block, and I was able to watch, you know, part of the game on all 22, to kind of see that the right side of the line, and I feel like in terms of pass pressure, they were better than the left side. Mm-hmm. And they did a lot of like half slide protections where you had the three kind of sliding to protect versus two. And then often they would put the left side in one-on-ones. And I think the Eagles kind of took advantage of that to a certain extent. And cause they did actually dial up a little bit of some activity up front. And it gave the left side a couple challenges. We talked about Voorhees already. But I think that just having that kind of like wall of size could be something that's interesting from a pass blocking standpoint, and getting reps for Falele, getting reps for Cleveland. And, you know, we'll see who the right tackle ends up being, but they're not going to be quite as big as those two guys on the inside. But having just that amount of, you know, frankly, just hard to get by for interior pass rushers, I think will be something that's interesting. Run blocking, you know, I already kind of had the same question about with Ben Cleveland. And I think I have maybe even more concern with Falele in that, because I think that he is definitely slow of foot. The Ravens like to pull their guards, and they pulled him a couple times, and I felt like he was a little bit sluggish there, and he might have missed a couple of blocks. That's going to be something he has to improve on, I think, if he's going to be in that role for an extended period of time. If they want him to actually be a starting player for them at guard.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies top shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and Watch or Tap, also on them.
Service plan required for Watch or Tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
He's going to have to work hard in that area.
Right. Right. All right. We'll totally agree. Let's move on in the show and we'll talk about individual offensive players and their performances. I know people want to hear about other than the three offensive linemen here, but start wherever you want. I'll try and stay in the position group, but give your guy and then I'll do one or respond and do mine. Yeah.
I know. So he wasn't put into your grading, but your take on Josh Jones, I would be curious to hear just the reps we watched. I felt like he was solid in pass protection. I think he did what he was asked to do. He laid up a couple of pressures. But I think that, you know, he's someone who has had some starting play in the NFL. He has more experience. Decent all around performance for him in week one.
Probably decent is a fair thing. He didn't give up any quarterback hits. He didn't give up any sacks and he didn't have any penalties. And a game like that for Josh Jones is avoiding most of the things which have just been very bad for him in his whole career. In terms of pressure, he did have some pressure and I've laid it out in the article. I don't want to just completely redo another scoring thing for this, but I noted five plays where I would have given him a zero or negative score that just occurred organically in the note-taking because we did not do a snap-by-snap analysis of his play. So I wasn't looking for Jones every play. And it's possible I could have missed a bad run block that occurred on a decent run or potentially even some shared pressure event where I noted it for some other player. It is possible. But about the best he might have done is about a 73, I think. And that's just taking those deductions and assuming there were none others. Remember, it's a deduction system that I'm using, induction from one system. So, on an adjusted basis, that'd be still a C probably against the players he faced. And honestly, that would be fantastic if you get that out of Josh Jones. If you could have Josh Jones be a league average level backup left tackle, you would sign up for that deal in a heartbeat. And you know what? Josh Jones would leave for a lot of money next year, too, if that happened.
Yeah. And I guess the follow-up to that is then, I mean, he's clearly on the roster, right? Like, he's going to be on the roster, and he's going to be probably the backup left tackle, if not. I don't know if he would play right tackle. I think that's still probably Mr. McCarrie who would be there.
I think it could be. I think what I would say now is they want Jones to play tackle and not have another position that he's responsible for. It's a great benefit for the Ravens to go into the season with two barely above the replacement level. Let me put it that way. Potentially above the replacement level players who could back up at each tackle spot.
Yep.
And McCary can back up at both tackle spots. I think Jones probably can too. But I don't think they want Jones to play guard, which means they've got to find the other interior offensive linemen who give them that versatility within a 5-3 scheme on 9 players. Yep. They could play the McCary trump card and move him inside. But once you do that, you take away a lot of your tackle versatility. So I hope they don't end up having to do it.
So I guess then maybe we could move inside and talk a little bit about one of the other players. I don't think we've talked about what is the Maryland guy of Maryland? He's slipping.
Corey Bullock.
He played, I think, right guard in this game.
He played right guard and center for one snap, actually, for the last snap of the game.
He played for two series.
It was two series at right guard, and included the 15 play touchdown drive where he had a number of run blocks. I mean, he's in the notes. And again, I don't want to go through every single note I've got for players, but I thought he played reasonably well. He's a guy, I don't think he's past Tayshaun Manning in my opinion, in terms of where he is in the guard totem pole. But I think he's a viable practice squad player. And, when you look at the offensive line crew that they've got towards the end of the line, I think he's one of the guys.
So you think potentially practice wise, you don't think there's a chance that he could sneak onto the roster?
Very low. It would almost be a nuclear situation if he did. It wouldn't be anything you'd want to be wandering through without a radiation suit if this happened, seriously.
So we mentioned a little bit Dalcourt, him coming in and playing center after Cleveland went out. Do you have any interesting notes on him?
The only note I took about him was a inability to find a screen pass on a block on a screen pass to Ali. But he was only in there for 9 snaps, 3 play series. And that was all the playing time he got. So even though Stamack came in after him, he got a lot more playing time than Stamack. And Stamack, I had some good notes about. So that was good. But Dalcourt, honestly, he jumped ahead of him. And we talked about the reasons of the first show that I think his guard center versatility is probably the reason why they want him there.
Yeah. And with Stamack, I mean, he was in there for the one long drive you mentioned, the 15 play, had a few nice blocks as well. I mean, that and you mentioned earlier, and I think in the previous podcast, that was basically a drive that it was pretty much entirely running the ball, right? I mean, it was just the offensive lineman kind of getting good push and then, getting some nice runs out of Ali and out of, now I'm losing names.
Collier
as well. So I think that potentially there are some guys who could be interesting from practice squad kind of idea. We might see, of kind of a final kind of like competition for the last, if they're carry 9 offensive linemen, they're gonna have to choose one of these interior guys most likely to be that one. And I think, you think versatility is going to be kind of the trump card when it comes to choosing one?
I would say so. Last year, they had Mustafer was a guy they were able to keep on the practice squad for a long time without having to elevate him. And he was pretty much a pure center only. Now, he did play a little bit of guard for the Ravens at some point during last season, but it wasn't much and he wasn't very good there. They really wanted him as a backup center. And they've already kind of tipped their strategic hand to us from last year's roster activity to show that they're willing to cut a guy and take the chance on losing him when he's just a backup center. Now, Samak, it's not the same as Mustafer because Mustafer was a fourth-year player and they didn't have anything invested in his future. Samak, potentially, they could have a growing player, but they've also got Linderbaum for a minimum of 3 more years. Yep. Even if they'd have to pick up a fifth-year option on Linderbaum to guarantee that third year, and that might be too expensive because it's an interior line money, but they still might do it. Or they might sign him early. Either way, the commitment to Linderbaum is clearly there. you know, and they're not looking to find a center replacement. So they're probably going to be willing to take some chances with players like Dalcourt or Samak. Dalcourt gives them a little more in terms of the ability to fill in at guard if he's needed.
Yeah, I would be shocked if the Ravens don't pick up Linderbaum's fifth year or have an extension in place for him, just because, I mean, obviously, you know, he's been very good. I think mm-hmm. it goes without saying, but center is in a position that normally gets the massive amount of money as well. So I think you can have somebody who's a kind of a linchpin of your offense, and they don't have that many players on offensive line right now.
Yeah, it speaks to option B being the really only option there, though, because if you sign him to a fifth-year option, he's kind of got you. He's kind of got the Ravens over the barrel in terms of an extension, because they can't give him left tackle money to play center, and it's a five average of the top five, I think it is, and those are all going to be left tackles. So it's going to be, you know, it's going to be big money to sign him to bump that fifth-year option. Yeah.
Well, I think the fifth-year option, I think you take it because you have to choose that after the third year, right? So
yeah,
if you don't have that, then you potentially have the significant risk of losing him as a free agent.
But let's say it's $23 million or $25 million you have to pay this guy. You're paying him left tackle money effectively to play center. I don't think you can overpay by $10 million. I think you need to make that deal after year three, get it done, but you know, preferably before you have to even commit to the fifth year option, which is later in the process. It's like after the draft, I think.
So you're saying they're all the offensive linemen that your options are the same.
Uh-huh.
So they
all get pooled together for purposes of that. And what's the other one? The franchise tag, right?
I knew it for the franchise tag. I didn't realize it was the same for the fifth year.
You know, I'm not the best resource on that. I will say, you know, this is the kind of thing I go to Brian McFarland for the finer points, but I believe I've had that lecture given to me before, but maybe we can look it up while we're doing the rest of this show. Is there another player you'd like to talk about? Maybe a skill position player
I think there's one more offensive lineman that maybe we should touch on quickly, which is Roger Rosengarten. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, another rookie first opportunity. We talked about him a little bit just because he was rotating a series with Mekari. Overall impressions of his play?
I'll just say the good news is he's only in for 18 snaps. The good news is the only note I have about him is a good seal on Jeremiah Trotter to help lead Wright's 5-yard run in quarter one. Okay. That's really good. You know, offensive lineman, you don't want a lot of specialized notes. You don't want a lot of writing over in the notes column for an offensive lineman, because it's usually something went wrong. Occasionally it's a highlight block that you have to describe, but more often than not, it's something went wrong, and it can be something went terribly wrong. That just wasn't the case with Rosengarten in this game. I there wasn't an individual play, but you know, with his 18 snaps, I decided not to do a grading run on him. I know a lot of people want to know it. First game he's over 20. Certainly the first game he's over 25. I'll make sure I do.
I mean, is it too early to say you expect him to be the starting right tackle, or is it?
It's probably too early to say that for week one. And just because I've been burned before, I thought it was a sure freaking slam dunk beyond slam dunks that Orlando Brown was going to beat out James Hurst in 2018 for the starting job. And they waited in a colon twisting 7 weeks for that to occur. You know, so they went through almost a half a season basically of having James Hurst out there getting help blocks from Yanda, play after play after play, adding help on that side, you know, to block as well. And it wasn't like Hurst was terrible that year either, which made the torture even worse. And then, of course, you know, when Brown got in there, he ended up being an outstanding player. And by 2019, we were saying, what the hell was going on with this? I wouldn't put anything past Harbaugh in terms of his own thoughts on motivating offensive linemen who he don't think he's getting 100% from. So I don't know in Rosengarten's case that it's a motivations issue. I think it may just be an anchor issue. And there's just not enough data points for me to give you some kind of grading profile that would say, yeah, his anchor is fine after 18 snaps. And I really know that. We need to have more data.
Okay. Real quick, getting back to the fifth-year option, my understanding is it's based on the success of the player, and it looks like it is offensive line, all of them. So If you're a Pro Bowler, you get more money. If you're a starter, you get more money. If you kind of were just a guy, you don't get as much money.
Do you happen to have the number for what it would have been this year for that fifth year option?
For this year, so Penei Sewell would have made $19 million. So it looks like it's based on an average of top 10, maybe, as opposed to top five.
So that seems like too high, but you might keep your insurance policy and say, okay, one more year at $19 million. That'll give us a whole year to negotiate and you a whole year to be in fear of getting hurt and reducing your total career earnings. It can create some divisible benefit on the table. It's still a lot of money relative to what I think he would end up getting. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I mean, by the time his contract rolls around, he may be in that 18 to 20 million range for centers. That's, I mean, guards are getting paid $24 million a year now. So it's not out of the possibility that probably Creed Humphrey's probably going to set the market for him, I guess is. And then we'll probably be in the same range if they want to do that, which seems likely. But you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Anyway, we could get back to some of the other players if you want. Kind of got off track there.
No problem. Start us off. Who do you want to talk about?
I think, you know, we talked a little bit about the wide receivers. We didn't spend much time on it. So maybe circle back real quick. Tez Walker didn't play very much. He was once targeted. I'm more interested in because you've been watching, you know, the camp more closely than I have. We've seen some highlights out of him. Do you think he's someone who's going to be part of that offense in this season?
You know, if I had to guess, I think he gets a very limited role this year based on what I'm seeing. I'm just not seeing him advancing, getting the opportunities even with Lamar to catch the football. So that's kind of frustrating. He needs to really, really spend some time working on the craft of receiving. So we talked about this with Breshad Perriman, who is, you know, a very fast player who needed receiving skills. Tez Walker right now is not the greatest route runner. So he needs the complementary route, which goes with the things he does well, which is go deep. And he's good on corner, post, go. All of those are strengths. But he needs to have the comeback route that goes with that he can sell and counter sell to that cornerback at the top of the stem. And if he can't figure out, if that cornerback can't figure out on a regular basis what Tez Walker is selling, then they need safety help over the top. And that's exactly what the Ravens want, is for the safety to be cheating over towards Tez in every case. They want a safety cheating over towards Zay as well, because that'll open up the middle of the field like nobody's business. You want linebackers cheating up the line of scrimmage to try and deal with Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry, so you get your tight ends free. But Walker just doesn't have that complementary set of routes. So getting back to him, just specifically, I think his this is going to be a developmental year for him. He'll get on the field plenty, but he won't have a big role in the offense. And you know, if you think back to maybe Demetrius Williams or a player like that who was you know, fast but a deep threat, maybe think like that for his first year.
Yeah, I think that it's interesting because when he was drafted, there's a lot of buzz about him because he fit a role on the team that wasn't necessarily there in terms of the roster composition. You had some speed. You know, obviously, Zay Flowers is fast, but he's not necessarily your prototypical just like downfield. He does a lot more than that. So I think there's a lot of consideration that maybe he can be the guy who's going to be your X receiver, who's going to take the top off the defense, deep threat, and allow some of the middle of the field to be more open to Bateman, to Andrews, likely, et cetera. It seems like you don't think he's going to really even have that much of a role. He's not going to be someone who's on the field 30 snaps a game. You don't think
30 snaps a game? I would say slightly less than that as a rookie. If I had to over under it, there's a lot of things being considered. So I'm already factoring in for injuries with this, but I'd say if he got 400 snaps, I think that maybe we're about where I'd send the over under. That's 25 snaps per game, effectively at 425. That might be a reasonable over under for me. And if somebody gets hurt, if Bateman got hurt, all of a sudden he might be playing 55 snaps a game. Yeah. And all those projections go out the window. If he gets hurt, obviously they go out the window in the other direction. So
I don't think there's really anybody else that's really interesting to talk about the wide receiver position. I mean, Tylan Wallace had a nice game. He had a couple of nice catches. Wade also, nice. I think yard after catch is kind of his strong suit. So he might have some stickiness there potentially. It's hard to see him making the roster though.
It is hard to see, and he may just be an elevation, but the Ravens really value his combination of speed and elusiveness. And I think, you've lost Devin Duvernay. You've lost Mitchell for most of the season, if not the whole season. You have Flowers, who you really don't want in that role.
Yeah.
And then you have Hill. And so it would be really nice to add a guy like Wade who gives you some of that. And they could, there's other players, like maybe Wallace could give them some of that. And there's other players who can. If you want a really shifty athlete, I think Dayton Wade is a nice missed tackle forced by elusiveness kind of guy that is potentially intriguing.
Yeah, for some reason, it seems like it's been hard for the Ravens to find that player. Kind of like the third, fourth wide receiver who's just like a shifty slot person who can create yards after the catch and be a good route runner. You know how to get open. It seems like other teams find them easily. And the Ravens just haven't been able to find that player. And they've tried. It's not for lack of trying. It's just something they haven't had in their scouting that's worked out for them.
One of the things is Keaton Mitchell's is probably one of the greatest players of all time in that category. And he was lost. And they've never had Tyreek Hill or something like that, but they've had other, the problem was that like a player like Duvernay, who's more of a linear athlete, more of a slower 0-60 speed, was cast in that role and probably was, 85% of what some of the other really top players that are fitting that role have been. But the Ravens, acquiring several of them should, is going to be a priority, I'd say, for a Monken offense where they're trying to get all the blades of grass defended.
Yeah, I think that's definitely going to be a key for them. The wide receiver position probably isn't going to get as much use, I think, as last year. They're probably going to be more of a tight end and heavier personnel team this year, just because of that's where they have the talent. They don't have four deep wide receivers like they had last year, honestly. So it's probably not as critical for this season, but it is interesting to see how a player like that could fit into the offense potentially.
I thought maybe we'd talk about the running backs before we close it out here. We've talked about the quarterbacks plenty, but the Wright and Ali battle for that third running back spot, we kind of hit on a little bit in the first show, but I think it's important to kind of get our bearings here, particularly with Rasheen Ali's night was just terrible. I mean, it was all kinds of awful. And we'll start with the bad news, then we'll get to the good in this case. But Ali had 10 rushes for, I think it was 26 yards. He only had one missed tackle forced. So that's a big number for a running back. You want to get into space. You want to make somebody miss. They gave him some decent level two opportunities in this game, but his long run was 5 yards. He only had one first down the whole game. When he was receiving, he had a 4-yard catch and a drop on 2 targets. Not what you want. And then, of course, on the one run back, he lost the football after he was down. So not a costly play, but not what you want to see if you're a Ravens coach observing that run back.
Yeah. And there's something that I noted. He likes to run east-west. I noted there were a couple opportunities where I felt like he could put his foot in the ground and gain some positive yards. And he tried to run horizontally instead of running vertically. And you can't do that in the NFL. Unless you have 4-3 speed, you're going to get caught. And that I saw, I think, him do 2 or 3 times on plays where he looked like he had a lane where he could have just, picked up 5 or 6 yards. He chose to kind of bounce it. And I don't think that's going to be something that's appreciated by the coaches. I'd like to see how he performs in another game. I think them having him in their kick return duty is interesting because I've heard a lot of people describe that as a kind of a running back role because of, you know, the potential ability to block with, you know, and set up different like schemes with the way that the dynamic return is set up now. So that might give him an opportunity, cause if that's something that they feel like he can excel in, but it definitely was a poor game for him. And Wright clearly had the upper leg. You know, he started for the team and performed significantly better in pretty much every aspect. So if there is a pecking order, it seems pretty clear that Wright has the lead right now.
Yeah. And that's, by the way, that's, I think, what we're seeing at camp too, is that he looks better. Ali, you nailed it when you said he really tries to bounce the outside, I think, too much. And both the other running backs, I think Wright and Collier, both showed us stick their nose into the limited space when that's all you got situation. Collier escaped the backfield on a play, I thought, very effectively. What should have been a probably loss of two or three ended up being a gain of two. Had a lot of respect for that run. Then he had a huge run to convert that third and four for the Ravens for, I think, 7 yards. It's kind of, they ran that student body right play effectively where a great center and right tackle both pulled on the play to the right. His decisiveness was just at a much higher level than Ali's. And I certainly would say that for Wright as well. And Ali did put a few, you know, 3, 4, 5 yard runs together on that big 15 play drive, but it was just it's night and day with Wright and Ali right now. And Ali, you know, frankly, he needs to have a closer's mentality about this game and, you know, be able to put this behind him and have a great week of practice, earn whatever reps he can get in the next preseason game. Certainly, in his case, he can't be worried at all about where he fits in the pecking order anymore. He just needs to, you know, hopefully get some reps against whatever competition there is and just improve his own running style. And yeah, you know, he should do better.
Yeah, he seemed, I think, hesitant was one of the words I would use. It didn't seem like he knew like what blocking lane he was supposed to be following. And his inability to get the ball across the goal line at the end of the game, I think, was probably frustrating for him. He's very close, but couldn't quite get there. And he's not a big back either. He doesn't necessarily have that power. And you mentioned him not being able to break tackles, or force missed tackles, which if he can't do any of those things in the league, he's not going to stick around for very long. So I still think there's some potential with him. Cause I did like what he did do in college, but it's a different ball game now. There's different requirements of you in the NFL. So, we'll see what the next game looks like. My guess is they're both going to get pretty significant amount of a run again. So yeah, it could look different, or it could be, you know, the same thing again.
Yeah. Take out 3 carries for Henry and, you know, 5 carries for Hill, and they get the rest of the carries again, more than likely. And since the Ravens will have the ball more, hopefully, against the Falcons after, you know, basically not possessing the ball at all versus the Eagles, you think they'll probably have as many carries or more.
Yeah. That was one of the difficult things about this game and watching on offense was they just didn't have much. They didn't have many snaps. There was a lot of three and outs. There was a lot of ugliness, and there wasn't a lot of consistency. The scoring drives that they did have, they had one long one in the second half, and then the ones in the first quarter, I think, were part of it was field position. You know, getting the ball after the fourth down turnover, so they didn't have to move the ball very far. Overall, just not much to talk about from that side of the ball.
One thing I'll say about my wife coming out of this game is I can't appreciate it enough. She hates night games as much as I do. And the reason we hate night games isn't because we don't love the excitement of a Monday night game and the Ravens' chance to win at home and all the things that go with that. I love that part of it. What I hate is coming back home between 10 and midnight, whatever time we get home, and then having to start our analysis. And all that means in terms of keeping Maureen up very late to do the notes with me. And she's unbelievably, you know, with this, but it's a very difficult thing, I'll say. And I just really appreciated that coming out of this first game and needed to mention it. All right. Anybody else we need to talk about before we call it for the night here?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, fair enough. Gabe, always a pleasure to talk football with you. Great mind for this kind of thing, a great mind for a lot of things. If you ever met Gabe, extremely intelligent guy, but appreciate you coming on the show. Tell folks where they can talk football with you.
Yeah, thanks again for having me. it's really always a pleasure to come and talk. Cause I really like to talk about the Ravens. I like talking about football in general. But yeah, I think that for to interact, probably the best way would be on Twitter. You can find me at Gabe Fergie. I think the first half, we talked a little bit about the Orioles, and that's one of the things that's big on our minds right now. Both of us are big Orioles fans. So, you know, as we're heading down to the end of that season, I'll definitely be, I watch every game, tweeting about it as it's happening, mostly frustrations with Brandon Hyde right now. And the Ravens, you know, they're right at the forefront now as well. So, catch up with me on Twitter. I'd love to just, you know, have a conversation about either of those two sports teams.
All right. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. I want to hear your thoughts. Make good use of hashtag film study mailbag with questions for next week. If there's things you want to know about the offense or the defense next week, get them in a hashtag film study mailbag and I'll try and address them. I do need to check and just see if anybody put anything out here for this show, because I put it out very late. And I was kind of guessing, nope, no questions this week. We'll get to some next week, and hopefully, you know, folks have more of a chance in terms of time. I apologize for the late notification here. Gabe, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken. Always a pleasure.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.